Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, sharing Perek Tedvav of Hilchot Melachim with you, the 15th chapter of the first book of Melachim. The chapter starts with Shnat Shmoneh Esrei LaMelech Yeravam Ben Nevan, Malach Aviyam Al Yehuda. In the 18th year of Yeravam, Aviyam becomes the king. So the Mefarshim noticed, and this is one of the first examples we're going to be able to have of problems of chronology in the book of Melachim, because after all, if Rehavam rules for 17 years, as it said in the previous parak, then how is it that Aviyam takes control in the 18th year of Yeravam? Because after all, Yeravam only came to rule around the same time as Rehavam, immediately after, soon after, but so it's a problem. So the Mefarshim deal with it. It doesn't mean he didn't take rule right away. It was the middle of a year for Yeravam, so they'd already counted it as a new year. All sorts of answers that you can give, but it highlights that chronology will be a continuing problem, usually by a year or so, but sometimes even more, as we'll see later in this parak. Shalosh shanim alach b'Yerushalayim, v'shem imo ma'acha bat Avishalom. We hear about his mother because she is assumed to also have been a chief instigator in the evils that are being done. So when Rehavam did them, we just saw them as Rehavam was doing them. And now we're going to hear that Ma'acha, whose son Aviyam becomes king after his father Rehavam, is also an important part of all of these evils that are going on. Vayelech b'chol chatot aviv asher asal lefanav. He follows his father's path. Velo haya levavo shalem im Hashem elokav kilvav David aviv. And his heart was not whole with God as it was with David. And then the pasuk again reminds us that the whole point of this line, this branch of the kingship having continued, was l'ma'an David. Ki l'ma'an David natan Hashem elokav lo nir b'Yerushalayim, a remnant in Jerusalem. Rule in Jerusalem. Somebody still holding on to the rule of Yerushalayim, like Yim ben Acharam, ul'ha'amid al Yerushalayim. Asher asad David ha'yashar b'nei Hashem. It's because David did the good in the eyes of God. V'losar because David didn't ever leave God and God's commands all the days of his life. Then the pasuk says, "Rak bidvar Uriah hachiti." Only in the matter of Uriah. This, of course, is a reference to David seeing Bathsheba and deciding that he needed to marry Bathsheba, and therefore doing something with Uriah, which seems to be that Yoav sent Uriah into battle to die, and so David seems to have arranged for Uriah's death. So something in there the Tanakh is blaming him for. There's all discussion in the Gemara about the extent to which and how we interpret David's actions and the extent to which we see them as sinful, but certainly the Pasuk is in some sense blaming David for something that happened in that whole incident. And of course the child that David and Bathsheba conceived, the first child they conceived, died. And so that also seems to be a punishment to David for what happened with Bathsheba and with Uriah. So that whole incident seems to be the one slip-up of David's life. But that wasn't the slip-up note of direct attack on David's fidelity to Hashem. It had little to do with that. It had to do with David, in some sense, giving into temptation, or David, in some sense, following his temptation in negative ways. But it's not directly about David's relationship with Hashem. That's not true now for Aviyam, as it wasn't true for Rehavam. They were going in a different direction. Pasuk tells us that Rehavam and Yeravam have war all the days of his life, and then returns to our Aviyam narrative. And Aviyam and Yeravam have war as well. So Aviyam dies and is buried in Ir David, and his son Asa will take over. I think it's a short reign, there's not a lot doing in it, and therefore you might wonder about that pasuk that was thrown in as to why we're reminded as to the war between Rehavam and Yeravam all the days of their lives. That's something we had seen at the summary of the end of Yeravam's life, but why bring it up here again? I would suggest that perhaps this pasuk is emphasizing to us that Aviyam's life, or at least his reign, was not even independent of his father's. It's not only that he continued his father's ways, he really was exactly like his father. He continues all the sins of his father, and therefore the war that continues between Aviyam and Yeravam is really a continuation of Rehavam's war. So if I had to read it, I would say that what the pasuk is trying to let us understand is that after Shlomo HaMelech passes away, there is a 20-year reign of evil, That is Rehavam, followed briefly by Aviyam. And then Aviyam dies, and then we're going to see that it changes when Asa becomes the king. That's what I would suggest, but it's not necessarily so clear. Uvishnat Esrim, the Yeravam Melech Yisrael, Malach Asa al Yehuda, in the 20th year. So again, if Aviyam rules for 3 years, and he takes over at 18, then all of a sudden it's 18, 19, and 20, and in the 20th year, Asa is taking over. So you can, again, handle these chronological issues in certain ways, and then Farshim do, worth noticing. Uvishnat Esrim, the Yeravam Melech Yisrael, Malach Asa al Yehuda, and now we have a stability of rule we did not see with Aviyam. Even Rechavam, 17 years is not the same as 41. So for 41 years, Asa rules. And his mother is Ma'acha bat Avishalom. So anybody who has been with me even for just this parak will recognize that we have a problem here, because Aviyam's mother is Ma'acha, and then Aviyam's son's mother is Asa. Is the same Ma'acha bat Avishalom. So what is going on here? Radak explains to us that, of course, we don't mean that she's his mother, we mean that she's his grandmother. Rashi says this, I'm sorry. That she's his grandmother. And we do see in Tanakh that grandparents can be called parents. You have that whole incident with Yitro. And if you follow the names of Yitro, it would seem like Reuel is either the father of the daughters of Yitro, in which case you have to say Reuel is another name for Yitro, or you might think that for other psukim in Tanakh reasons that he's the grandfather, and then you would invoke the rabbinic principle that grandparents are sometimes referred to as parents. So here too, you'd say that Ma'acha, the grandmother, is called the mother. But why would you say that? What's the point of bringing her up? So the point of bringing her up here is to emphasize that she is, first of all, still influential in Asa's time, so we'll see that a little bit later as well in this parak. In addition, that her influence is in terms of all the evil that is going on. So it seems like we spoke before about Rechavam in the previous parakim. What led Rechavam? So we suggested that it was Shlomo's involvement with other nations and things like that. And that may be true. And his mother is, in fact, an Ammonite. And that might also have been, if she's a poorly assimilated into Judaism Ammonite, that would be a problem. And if she worships idol, that's a problem. But it would also seem that Rechavam makes a poor marital choice, that he marries Ma'acha bat Avishalom, and she as well is a negative influence on Rechavam, on Aviyam. And yet, in the third generation, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayas Asa Hayashar Bnei Hashem Ki David Avi, we find out that Asa reverses the downward spiral of Malchei Yehuda. We won't see a reversal like that in Malchei Yisrael. And he spends 41 years doing what is right in the eyes of Hashem, like David his forefather. Until now, we have contrasted Rechavam and Aviyam in the negative. They weren't like David, their forefather. He is specifically said to be like David, his forefather. Vayavir hakedeshim min haaretz, and he removes all of the evil things from the land that we have seen in the previous prakim. So he removes the kedeshim, the prostitution, and that evil min haaretz. Vayaser kol hagilulim asher asu avotav, and all of the idols and other abominations that his father's forefathers had done. Vegamin ma'acha imo, his grandmother, he removed her from her position. Even though she is so close to him that she's like a mother, he removes her from her position. Asher astam mifletet la'asheva, she made some kind of abomination of a mifletet. The modern thing is a monster, but here it means an abomination for Asherah. Rashi has a very graphic description, seeing it as some kind of a sexual abomination that was a form of worship for Asherah. And he tears it apart, he breaks it apart, and he burns it in Nachal Kidron. He burns it in the Kidron River that is the border we saw earlier of Yerushalayim. So Asa seems to be working hard to remove all the evil from the land. Bamamot lo saru, but they're still bamot. Rashi explains these are bamot, the people had become so accustomed to before Shlomo HaMelech built the Beit HaMikdash. So it's an interesting paradox to watch and to see. You have a king who is, in the testimony of the Pasuk, honestly and wholeheartedly trying to return to the ways of David his forefather, and is himself, has returned to ways. He at great familial cost, clears the land of the abominations in their midst, of the Kedesh, of the... So, I noted the Rashi on Asherah, because it just suggested the Kedesh and the prostitution, was seen as being something important. It was something religious. It was an element within one's religiosity. And I read Tanakh, and I don't like to always draw the parallels to our times because maybe people don't see them the same way as I do, and also because it might sound like I'm being political. But when I read Tanakh, I wonder at our abilities today to ignore some of these parallels in terms of here, you have people using sexuality as a way of claiming that human ability to have free sexuality and kiddushim and prostitution over the land is an element in their religiosity. It's vital to who they are as people. And to think of what Asa is doing, Asa is combating that. So it's like we read and we assume, well, they can do whatever he wanted to do. But we know that's not true. We saw that even David HaMelech couldn't do whatever he wanted to do because David had to let Yoav live much longer than he wanted to, and he couldn't kill Shim'i when he wanted to. David had limitations even as king. So when we see Asa being able to turn around the entire nation, that's a remarkable endeavor, and we know that that takes a great deal of effort and a great deal of perseverance. And to stare down one's own grandmother and say, I'm very sorry, but I am unable to allow you to continue in your positions of rule because of who you are, it's a remarkable thing. And yet, and that's the point of all this, is the and yet. And yet, even Asa, when it comes to this, is unable to fully wage the war. The people can be forced or cajoled or coerced or convinced, one of any of those, to give up their idol worship. But when it comes to worshiping God, that point, that even if it's God worship, it has to be done in certain ways, that apparently they couldn't do. It would be akin to somebody coming across a group of Jews who were completely non-observant, or who mixed observance with non-observance in some ways. Right? Let's say they keep Shabbos, but they don't keep many other halachos that they're supposed to keep. And so he teaches them to start keeping the other halachos, to give up their non-observance. But when it comes to Shabbos, he can't touch it, even though they're doing things wrong in terms of Hilchos Shabbos as well. I don't know if you can imagine such a thing. I can imagine such a thing. So that's what happens here, and it's going to be true of much of Bayit Rishon. Ba'amavot lo saru. It's especially poignant if the Rambam is right, that part of the point of Korbanot as commanded by the Torah was to wean the Jews somewhat from their reliance on Korbanot. The Rambam says that it's to wean them from reliance on Korbanot, and that creates this whole problem that people always wonder, does the Rambam mean that there shouldn't be Korbanot in the future? And there's a whole debate about that. So I think that the Rambam doesn't mean that. He just means that it shouldn't be as central and as focused as it was in their time. And one of the ways you can know that it was so central and focused is that a king like Asa is unable to remove the Bamot. Trying to teach the people that Korbanot aren't so vital. You can wait till you get to the Beit HaMikdash to offer Korbanot. You can rely on the Korbanot of the Beit HaMikdash, and that is sufficient for what the world needs. And yet, Asa can't do it. Raglevav Asa Hashem Hashem Kol Yimav, but Asa was, in fact, fully faithful to Hashem, and his heart was complete and whole with God all the days of his life. Ve'aved kochei aviv, ve'kochei beit Hashem, kesev v'zahav v'kelim. And he brought all of the consecrated goods, all of the kodashim, to and out of his forefather and of his own, and he brought them gold and silver and other vessels to the Beit Hashem. Umechama hayta ben Asa uvein Ba'asha melech Yisrael kol yimehem. The next king of Israel, we haven't met him yet, is going to be Ba'asha, and he and Asa will have wars all the days of their lives. Vayal Ba'asha melech Yisrael Yehuda vayiven et Haramah. So one of the incidents of this war was that he comes to Yudah and he builds a big ramparts around or near Yerushalayim, trying to lock in Asa. He's trying to do a siege. So he's building the wall, meaning the walls of Yerushalayim may not have been built, but he's trying to build a bigger siege around this. So he builds Ramah. Vayikach Asa et kol hakesef v'hazahav hanotarim be'otzrot Beit Hashem ve'otzrot Beit Hamelech v'yitneh biyad Avadav. So he takes all of the remaining gold and silver, so that's what we saw in the Psukim 2 Psukim ago, when he brings them, it says. So here, we're finding out what he's going to do with all of this money. He brings all of this from the storehouses of the Beit Hashem, and the storehouses of the king, the gold, the silver, and whatever is left over, and he sends them to Ben Hadad Ben Tavrimon Ben Chazion, the king of Aram, and he tells him, we have a covenant, and our fathers had a covenant. So that covenant is very interesting because at the end of Shlomo's life, we had seen the king of Aram was a continuing problem. So apparently it turns out that either in Rehavam's life or in Avyam's life, there was some kind of a pact made. Hinei shalachti lecha shochad kesef v'zahav, I'm sending you a lot of money. Lechaferad b'chad b'asha melech Yisrael, so go break your pact, your covenant with b'asha, v'yalet me'alai, and let him leave me. So in Pasuk Chav, v'yishma ben hadad el hamelech asa, v'yishlach atzarech hayalim ashalo al ha'yisho, v'yachad yun v'edan, v'et avil v'et ma'acha, v'et kol kinrot al kol eretz naftali. So ben hadad agrees. He follows the plan, he accepts the bribe, he accepts the money, and he goes and he attacks the outskirts of Malchut Yisrael. So in Pazuk HaVala, Vahi Chishmoa Basha, Vayechdal Mi Benot Et Rama, so Basha stops building the Rama, and he goes back to Tzitzan, and he lives there, and he just stays there, meaning presumably he takes some of his forces and he puts them back into the defense of the other borders to get Ben-Hadad off his land, off his property, but he realizes that he can't fight a two-front war, and therefore he desists. So it's an incident which will have ramifications in a moment, but just as seeing it as it happened should raise a couple of questions. Question or issue number one to point out or to think about is to see how much the rift in the Jewish people has broadened, has expanded, and how terrible this whole civil war experience is. Meaning it's one thing to see that Rehavam and Yeravam have war all of their days, and they have fighting with each other, that is certainly upsetting, certainly a problem when you have Jew fighting against Jew, and we find reason to fight with each other. But here, we have it at a different level that should be even more distressing. Granting that Asa is an Oved Hashem, and Asa is in trouble, he has to turn to a foreign power to help him avoid the attacks, to help him survive the attack of Basha of Melech Yisrael. So just when we read it, when we think about it, when we hear it, we should be saddened by it. The second issue to consider at this point in Perek Tedvav of Melachim is that Asa does not seem to be blamed for having turned elsewhere for assistance. There will be occasions and incidents within the book of Melachim and within the history of Jewish people where somebody turning to a foreign power is seen as a betrayal of Hashem. Here it does not seem to be true. Perhaps he had a Navi with whom he consulted on this issue, but we're not told by that by the text. So V'hamelech Asa Perchav Bet V'hamelech Asa Hishmiya Kol Yudain Naki V'yisuit Avnei HaRama V'etzeha Asher Bana Ba'asha V'even Bam HaMelech Asa Et Geva Binyamin V'etmitzpah. So now he has a complete national draft, a whole nation draft, with no exceptions. Ein Naki, with no exceptions. And they take the stones of Ramah and all of the wood, the stones that he was building this rampart with, and they use them to build other places, Geva Binyamin and Mitzpah. So Chazal suggests that there's some problem here in the words Ein Naki, because we have a tradition, there are certain people who are exempt from certain kinds of communal service. The way we usually say it is that he called even a chatan mechupato, a kala mechedra, a bride and a groom. Here, where Chazal blame him is that they assume that he also called what we would call tamidei chachamim, people whose entire involvement is within Torah, and that those people are exempt also from certain kinds of communal activities. This is a delicate topic of the question of who gets immunity and who gets exemptions from communal things. So it's not from everything, but certainly there are certain kinds of communal involvements that are assumed to be the kinds of things that Tamidei Chachamim are freed of, and Chazal seem to think that here Asa perhaps ignored that exemption, thinking that the situation was more of an emergency than it actually was. So Pasuk of Kimos of Yetekol Divrei Asa v'chol Gevurato v'chol Asher Asa v'harim Asher Bana Halohim Aktuvim Asir v'divrei Yemim v'chayuda Rak Leizvikneto Chala et Raglav. The rest of what Asa did, and all of his gvura, all of his heroism, and all that he did, and he built cities. Notice the emphasis on building as being an important evidence of somebody's success as a king. So all of that is written in Masechta Melachim Yehuda, and in the end of his life, we find out chala et raglav. He got ill with his legs. So there's this really interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's interesting in two ways. First, it puts many of David's descendants in the context of that the curses that David declares for the house of Yoav eventually come back to his descendants. That's one element of what the Gemara says. The Gemara says anything that David told Yoav comes back to him, and he gives a couple examples. So it assumes that Rechavam was a Zav, because there's a mention of Mer Kava in the case of Rechavam, and then it assumes that Asa here was somebody who had to walk with a walker because he had problems with his legs, and that's one of the curses that David had expressed towards Yoav. So that whole question of cursing and of coming back to you is an interesting claim. What the Gemara, I believe, is suggesting is that for all that Yoav deserved David's negativity, there's a certain amount of a lack of care there, or there's a certain danger within cursing, within expressing evil over somebody else, or wishing evil on somebody else, or declaring the need for evil to happen to somebody else, that one should be careful about that, and that it is either likely to, or will tend to, or there's a danger of it also rebounding upon one's own descendants. Not sure why that would be. One possibility could be that it's a function of placing yourself in a certain awareness of what the world requires. Meaning, granted that so-and-so has done something wrong, that something wrong requires that his house will be full of lame people. That may be true, but if I, as a human being, declare it, then I think it's plausible to argue that that means that I'm claiming that I have sort of an understanding of this area of life and awareness of it, and that that might then lead to me and my descendants being of heightened vulnerability to it. Because if, after all, we are so aware of it that we're able to declare that other people deserve it, we're so aware of it that we're able to point fingers at others, so then we are also prone to that if we slip up on that issue, we would tend to get it. So let's say if Asahi or if Chazal were right, the one that I mentioned before, they're not necessarily connected, but if it was that Asahi is declaring too much of a draft on people and drafting even Talmidei Chachamim, we shouldn't have to come to help destroy the Ramah and use it to build other things, then it could be that when David reacts badly to Yoav, one of the things that he was saying to him was, you, Yoav, are acting wrong in this way, and the punishment for that is that you should have descendants who are lame. Happens to David's descendants too, because of this exact reason. Something along those lines. So that's one interesting question. The other interesting question that comes up there is that in that discussion, one of the Amoraim asked the other one, what did that feel like? And he says, it felt like they're putting pins in your legs. And so the question is, how does he know? So then we raise a couple of possibilities. One possibility is that he had a tradition, what it was. Another possibility is that he had the exact same illness, and that's how he knew. And then a third possibility the Gemara raises is that Sot Hashem Li Re'av, that those who fear God simply know stuff. And that's just an interesting mini-discussion, because it's applicable to many questions of how certain people know certain things. And the Gemara is advancing several different possible ways of knowing something. There's personal knowledge, there's a tradition, right? It's passed down. And then there's just sometimes people, especially those who fear God and those who serve God, will end up knowing things that otherwise they might not know. So he passes away and is buried, and his son Yehoshaphat, who we meet in later Prakim, becomes king after him. Nadav ben Yeravam, malach al Yisrael, bishnat shtayim lasa melech Yehuda. Nadav, the son of Yeravam, becomes the king over Yisrael in the second year of Asa. So Asa is going to have 41 years, so this is the second year of Asa, it seems. Malach al Yisrael shtayim, and he's only king for 2 years. We ask Rabbi Ne'ashem, we ask Kudir Chaviv, v'chatato asher achti Yisrael, he follows Yeravam's example. And so what happens is, in Pasuk of Zayin, v'ekshor alav basha ben achiyal v'yisachar, so a guy named Basha, who is of the tribe of Yisachar, decides to have a rebellion against him. He rebels against him, and while the Jews are fighting against Plishtim and they are laying siege to Gibton, he kills the king. He kills Nadav. So again, you have this chronology issue here. It's in the second year, and then 2 years of rule, and it's only the third year of Asa. So you can obviously fix that up, but that's what comes up a lot. And he becomes king. When he becomes king, Basha, he wipes out the family of Yeravam. Not a single soul was left to the family of Yeravam. And this, of course, fulfills the prophecy of Achiashiloni. Now, it's not said that Basha knew that. So it may be that Basha was just doing it because this was what was done in those times. If you wanted to try to take over the rule, it wasn't always enough to kill the reigning king, because then many people would think, well, granted that the reigning king is dead, but the way kingships happen is they pass hereditarily. So unless you wipe out the entire monarchical line, you're not going to have a good claim for yourself to be able to be the king. So that might have been Basha's, that might have been all that was in Basha's mind. The Pasuk, however, says that what led to this happening is the sins of the family. Pasuk Lam El Chatot Yeravam Asher Chata Vasher Hechati Et Yisrael. It was really for all the sins of Yeravam. As we've noticed before, as we've mentioned before, this is what Avot points to when it says that if you are the one who's Machti Et Yisrael, who leads others to sin, then all of their sins are weighted down upon you. So what Yeravam suffers for and what his descendants suffer for is not only their personal sins, but the fact that they led the Jews, a wide group of Jews, a large population of Jews, into greater sin. In all the ways that he would create anger in the God of the Jewish people by not following the Torah, by leading others astray. And the rest of whatever Nadav did in the 2 years that he had, they are in the history books of the kings of Israel. You can go consult the history books if that's what you care about. They also had war all of their days. Okay? That war in Pasuk Lamed Gimel and Lamed Dalet will create some problem for us. Because in Pasuk Lamed Gimel we say, Bishanat Shalosh Lasam Lach Yuda Malach Bashaven Achyal Yichol Yisrael B'tirtza Esrim Var Bashana. Problem with this story is that the way it says it, Malachim, is that in the third year of Asa, Basha becomes king. If that's true, and he's king only for 24 years. If that were true, it should mean that when he dies, it's the 27th year of Asa. And indeed, if you look in Perek Tzayin, Pasuk Chet, it does say that in the 26th year of Asa, Elah ben Basha becomes king. So if you follow that chronology, you're fine, except the chronology in Divrei Hayamim is different. And again, I've said before, I'm not going to try to always solve those problems. I would just notice that the Radak has an interesting claim. He suggests that the chronology here is different, because chronology there is different, saying that the Rama was built in the 36th year of Asa. Problem is that Basha dies, as far as Malachim is concerned, in the 27th year of Asa. So the Radak claims that in the beginning of Asa's reign, there were 8 or 9 free years. Years without war, years in which perhaps Nadav wasn't fully in control, yet Nadav, being Yeravam's son, wasn't completely in control of the kingship, and therefore they just dropped out of the count. They just dropped out of what goes on. And that will then affect all of the rest of the counting later on, and the Radak doesn't do it each time, but that would be one claim. It would heighten, if that were true though, it would heighten our noticing that Malachim is not as vitally concerned with history as it would seem would be important to do, because after all, it's going to drop out 9 years and not mention them. But that's the Radak's attempt to deal with that problem. But yeah, in any case, now when we're learning about Basha and Lamedala, Vayasa Rabbi Hashem, Vayelech B'derech Yeravam, V'chatato Asher Echti Et Yisrael, he too follows the way of Yeravam, even though he takes over from Nadab ben Yeravam, and he kills off that whole line. So you might have thought that he was going to recognize the evils that they do. There is no such luck for the northern kingdom from Malchi Yisrael. He does kill them off, but he kills them off and then continues in their path, and he becomes a king like them. And we'll see in tomorrow's Perek and Perek Zion that will therefore bring down upon him a similar fate to what came before, and this will be a continuing cycle that we'll have to follow as the northern kingdom spirals down into its eventual loss and exile, and we'll see all of the events in the coming days. Have a great day.